Спасибо. Добрый день.
Just a second.
Mike?
Учился русского языка в школе. Это был только 50 лет тому назад. Ну, извините меня, я говорю по-английски. The topic today is national economies under globalization. And I should start by recalling that yesterday, Rector Zapolzetsky posed a very interesting question for the panel, which was, what is the natural course of the evolution of a globalized economy? Does it lead to a homogeneous market space in which every participant is equal, as is imagined in the models of a textbook economic theory?
Значит ли, что развитие национальных экономик придет к какому-то гомогенному состоянию, что все экономики будут похожи друг на друга?
And I answered no, that the course of events is unlikely to be like that, and that the result of an unfettered globalization is much more likely to be in the form of a hierarchy or a pyramid, perhaps a one with somewhat complex structure, but nevertheless dominated by certain countries and certain sectors and certain individuals. With others in a distinctly subordinate position. So you have a tendency for these relationships to organize themselves in the form of the core and the periphery.
И таким образом состояние тел сложится неминуемо, что будет центр и периферия.
And what determines who is in the core? Where are the advantages? Well, there are principles of scarcity and of power, of that which is desirable and that which can be controlled. And there, the crucial elements in economics are surely, on the one hand, resources and finance and technology.
Это будет, конечно, определяться критериями ресурсов, технологий и интересов финансов, конечно, и интересами стран, в том числе осуществлять контроль через эти параметры на всеми остальными.
There is also the question, ages-old question of military power, which always plays a role, but in the conditions of the modern world, I think it is now clear that the advantages of military power cannot be very permanent because it is simply too destructive, and also when applied in small measure, the advantages are entirely on the side of the defense. So military power is something which is only advanced by foolish people. Not that there is a shortage of foolish people in the world.
Один из этих критериев является наличие вооруженных сил и военной силы, которая определяет доминирование одних стран, которые, по крайней мере, они так хотят. Но в настоящее время вопросы оборонной стратегии, когда они ставятся в другом угла, скорее всего, на это претендуют весьма недалекие люди.
So I come back to this triad of resources, finance, and technology.
Я возвращаюсь к этой триаде: ресурсы, технологии и финансы.
And this conversation was pursued in a session over downtown at the hotel yesterday afternoon with the international participants.
Этот вопрос поднимался вчера на секции в гостинице с присутствием иностранных участников.
Extremely interesting colloquy, at least I thought so, initiated by professor of North American Studies from the University of Tehran, Professor Ameli.
Профессор Абель инициировал эту дискуссию, профессор из американского университета.
Well, American Studies at the University of Tehran. He's a specialist in American Studies.
Professor американский студий на университете в Техран, Иране.
Иране.
Иран.
Who made the point that the current structure of globalization, what we call globalization, has a very strongly American cast to it, that is to say, very strongly characterized by the presence and even the dominance of the United States.
Профессор Тегеранского университета утверждал, что в настоящее время процесс глобализации в значительной степени определяется взглядом на процесс Соединенных Штатов.
So I developed that point a little bit and asked the question, what was the old order and what is the present one?
Я хочу немножко поговорить об этом и спросить, какой все-таки существовал раньше мировой порядок, и какой существует сейчас.
If you think about the world that was created in the aftermath of the Second World War, of course it was characterized by a division into two broad spheres of influence.
Если мы посмотрим на мир по состоянию после Второй мировой войны, естественно, он определялся двуполярной системой.
It was stabilized by a set of international institutions, the United Nations, broadly speaking, and under them on the economic side, the so-called Bretton Woods institutions, particularly the International Monetary Fund and the exchange rate system that the IMF was supposed to manage.
Существовали инструменты стабилизации этого понятного мира. Это, конечно, Организация Объединенных Наций и, с другой стороны, Международный валютный фонд.
All of which was predicated on the view that prevailed at that time that trading relations and financial relations would be substantially balanced around the world.
И существовало такое точка зрения, что в таких условиях торговые и финансовые отношения они будут сбалансированы по всему миру.
And what actually happened was quite different. And really the turning point, a crucial turning point, was in 1970. 1970s.
1970s.
Up to that time, the United States, which was, I believe, the largest oil-producing country in the world, had resource reserves. After it, it did not, and we became increasingly dependent upon resource flows from the rest of the world, from the Middle East and elsewhere.
Если до этого Соединенные Штаты являлись крупнейшим производителем энергоресурсов, то в 70-х годах они попали в зависимость от нефтяных стран.
And when you combine that with the recovery of industry elsewhere, especially in Europe and Japan, the result was an increasing imbalance between trade between the U.S. and the rest of the world, which itself destabilized the financial system.
И если к этому добавить восстановление экономики Европы и Японии, то это привело к определенной дестабилизации всей финансовой системы.
And after 1980, what replaced the previous managed international financial system was one that was unmanaged, but that was centered very heavily on the United States dollar.
После 80-го года центр финансовой системы стал определяться положением американского доллара.
Which gave my country and certainly its citizens an enormous privilege, an exorbitant privilege in world trade and finance.
Это дало моей стране, Соединенным Штатам Америки, огромное преимущество по сравнению с другими странами.
And develop the present system in which the United States capital market acts as the kind of place where everybody goes for shelter in a financial storm.
И американская долларовая система стала неким приютом, укрытием, куда страны обращаются в ситуации нестабильного мира.
And then you have, on top of that, the development of the new era of technology, which my Iranian colleague pointed out had two major facets, a virtual facet and a physical facet. The virtual facet is computation and communications. The physical facet is transportation, essentially, and especially aviation. Very much changing and bringing the world together in both physical and virtual sense. And the thought that occurred to me was that both of those were essentially, had their origins, their modern origins, essentially in the military sector of the United States. Aviation comes out of the developments in the second, in the Cold War, essentially. Communications and comes out of of the advanced research projects of the Defense Department, commercialized by the private sector, miniaturized and made available to the world by the Japanese. But nevertheless, these are both essentially, confections that originate in, let's say, the state of California.
Нельзя не признать, что развитие технологий происходило в первую очередь внутри оборонного сектора, который создавал в годы Холодной войны авиационную промышленность и компьютерные технологии. И в какой-то момент этим смогли воспользоваться коммерческие компании.
And the reason why this is, it has its attractive features, but the reason why there's so much resistance to it, which is quite also reasonable, is that it has given rise to a vast structure of inequality. And so civil society everywhere takes the view that something must be done to overcome, to rebalance, to provide some, let's say, counterweight to the tendency here to concentrate wealth and power in one particular set of sectors in one particular part of the world. And that raises the question, what can the nation state do in this international system which has such a strong tendency to asymmetry, unbalance, and inequality?
Что могут делать национальные экономики, чтобы противостоять такому сложившемуся централизованному положению?
And the answer to that, I think, is in three parts. The first has to do with resources.
И ответ находится в трех измерениях. Первое – это ресурсы.
A sovereign nation state retains control of its land, of its minerals, of its natural resources.
Суверенное государство осуществляет контроль на своей территории, минеральными ресурсами и так далее.
And to some degree of its human talent.
И в какой-то степени над человеческими ресурсами.
And preserving this sovereign right is an extremely important thing.
И вот сохранение этого суверенного права чрезвычайно важно.
We could talk about the importance of this with respect to climate, but in the interest of time, I won't come to that. Secondly, there's the question of controlling financial flows. And this is a major point of contention in world discussion. It's a major point of argument. It's a point of debate. Ideologues argue for open financial flows. This is in the interest of the financial center.
Если мы будем со стороны национальных государств требовать свободных финансовых потоков, то это будет играть на руку
international law and to some degree common sense argue for national control of financial flows, even though this restricts to some degree personal liberties. Because this provides some capacity for stabilization. And then you come to the third question, which is technology. And there I think the issue is more difficult to resolve because there is a very strong tendency for technology to penetrate national borders. I suspect if I asked you to hold up your cell phone, everybody would be, we would wave them at each other. The consolation there is that, as Schumpeter told us, technological advantage is always transitory. One technology, the modern technology of this generation, will be the obsolete technology of the next one. So perhaps it is possible for national institutions to provide some counterweight to the tendency of the globalized economy to produce inequality. And while the tension between those two things will never go away, managing it, it seems to me, is the task that we as economists should be attempting to make a contribution toward.
Несмотря на то, что вот эта тенденция будет сохраняться, несбалансированного мира, все равно, благодаря работе финансовых институтов и наших усилий экономистов, мы можем все-таки стремиться к определенному балансу.
There are many other topics. I know you raised a question about regions in Germany and Greece, and I would like to address them. The chair is telling me that I should defer until such time as he allows me to get back to the microphone. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.